morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about Montana's new Grizzly Bear Advisory Council, Transgender Day of Remembrance, and feral swine. It's Tuesday, November 19th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Environmental regulators have put a stop to a Montana Business Association's sale of sandwich bags of mining waste advertised as Bag O' Slag. Anaconda Chamber of Commerce officials say the Environmental Protection Agency's concern was that the bag was resealable. The slag contains small amounts of lead and arsenic. Anaconda's golf course, which has slag in its sand traps, sells slag and a golf ball in a sealed container. The public had until midnight last night to comment on the recently updated draft environmental impact study for the Keystone XL pipeline. As Olivia Reingold reports, commenters include Montana's Governor Steve Bullock.
In the final hours of the 45-day comment period, the submission count passed the 1,000 comment mark on the court-mandated update. Governor Steve Bullock, a Democrat, helped get it there. On Monday, his office submitted comments on behalf of the state of Montana, expressing concerns about potential spills and impacts to tribal nations. Commenters raised concerns over potential environmental impacts after the Keystone system had one of the biggest onshore spills of the past decade. It leaked an estimated 383,000 gallons of oil in eastern North Dakota last month, according to its Canadian owner, TC Energy. One commenter says, quote, "The very real risks of a devastating oil spill from the Keystone XL pipeline is far too great," end quote. Another says that he's, quote, "comfortable with the precautions the leaders of the project have taken to protect the surrounding environment," end quote, and that the pipeline should move forward because of its economic gain to the counties it'll cross. Now the State Department will consider all substantive comments. Those are comments that relate to the scope of the environmental draft. If necessary, it will complete more environmental analysis. Then the State Department will publish a final environmental draft and wait at least 30 days to issue a record of decision. The State Department did not respond to requests for comment in time for broadcast. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Olivia Reingold.
A crude oil spill from the Keystone Pipeline in eastern North Dakota has affected almost 10 times the amount of land as first reported, a state regulator said yesterday. The leak, reported October 29th, is now estimated to have affected more than 209,000 square feet, up from the original estimate of 22,500 square feet. Calgary, Alberta-based TC Energy, formerly known as TransCanada, estimates its pipeline leaked 383,000 gallons of oil. On Sunday, the company said it had recovered about 338,000 gallons of oil, along with 142,000 gallons of oily water. The cause of the spill remains unknown, as a third-party laboratory inspects an affected section of pipe. TC Energy resumed pumping Canadian crude oil through the Keystone Pipeline as of November 11th. The public comment period on an updated environmental impact statement for the Keystone XL pipeline closed yesterday. After Montana's new Grizzly Bear Advisory Council met last week in Bozeman to map out a state management plan for the expanding grizzly populations near Yellowstone and Glacier National Parks, researchers in Missoula railed against turning management over from federal agencies to the state. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton and Yellowstone Public Radio's Rachel Kramer have more.
As grizzly bear populations in Montana expand into areas where they haven't been seen for generations, so does the number of potential conflicts with humans. The governor's Grizzly Bear Advisory Council's goal is to reduce that risk and shape state management of grizzlies if and when populations are removed from the endangered species list. Currently, bears are managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Michelle Dietrich is a teacher in Hamilton and one of the 18 council members.
One of the reasons I applied to the council was to try to get ahead of the game and start an education program and a mitigation program in the Bitterroot before the bears arrive.
Over the two-day meeting in Bozeman, biologists shared where grizzlies are on the landscape currently and where they're likely to be seen in the near future. some of the estimated 700 bears in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem have been moving north and west into the gravelly range near Ennis and south and east into Wyoming. The Northern Continental Divide ecosystem around Glacier National Park has a little over 1,000 grizzlies. Bears from that population have been moving south and farther east. FWP biologist Cecily Costello says grizzlies from the two populations are separated by less than 50 miles. This is one metric federal managers will use to argue both sets of bears are ready for state management. Following the advisory council meeting, critics of removing federal endangered species protections from both populations of bears met in Missoula. MTPR's Aaron Bolton has more on that.
Five independent researchers at the University of Montana on Friday called for state and federal wildlife officials to make connectivity between populations more of a priority in their grizzly recovery plan under the Endangered Species Act. It was one of a handful of arguments against turning management over to states. The high numbers of grizzly deaths and removals around Glacier National Park this year also came up. The 50 grizzly deaths and removals in northwest Montana this year is just one away from last year's record high. Most grizzly deaths are happening on the edge of recovery zones. State and federal officials say that's because the number of bears in the landscape is increasing. But critics like wildlife researcher David Manson say it's the lack of food resources like seeds from whitebark pine and cutthroat trout that are driving bears to roam.
Not coincidentally, where we saw the greatest losses, we've seen the greatest increase in distribution, almost certainly driving much of that increase in distribution.
Matson and others called on the Fish and Wildlife Service and Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks to end the court battle over delisting Yellowstone bears, as well as efforts to propose grizzlies near Glacier National Park for delisting. In a recent visit to Montana, U.S. Interior Secretary David Bernhardt said the Yellowstone court case would not slow down efforts to delist bears near Glacier. It could take a year or more before a ruling comes down on the Yellowstone case, and the governor's advisory council is due to release its recommendations in the summer of 2020. With Montana Public Radio News, I'm Aaron Bolton.
And I'm Rachel Kramer with Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Yesterday morning, Billings received another in a recent string of school-related threats. Kayla DeRoche reports these recent incidents will factor into a federal database in 2021.
At around 7:30 Monday morning, someone called West High School with threats against the high school and the Career Center. According to a Billings Police Department press release, a lockdown lasted roughly an hour while officers investigated and eventually contacted the suspect, a student at Laurel High School. As of Monday afternoon, no arrests had been made and details of the threat were unknown. Billings School Superintendent Greg Upham points out this incident may be in response to heightened public attention paid to two other incidents that made statewide news in the last couple of months.
It just seems like sometimes this comes in clusters when they're on the forefront, and we surely treat everyone with our due diligence as far as safety is concerned. So,
last month, authorities traced a Helena bomb scare and evacuation back to a bottle full of nuts and bolts a homeless person left in a school playground. The following week, police connected a lockdown in Billings to two 17-year-old boys carrying non-lethal airsoft pistols off school property. These events garnered statewide media attention, but many others don't. For instance, earlier this month on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, the Lame Deer Junior High School went on lockdown following a firearm threat that went widely unreported outside the community. Office of Public Instruction Communications Director Dylan Klapmeyer says schools are required to report things like threats of physical attacks with or without weapons to the federal government every other year, and the state pulls from those reports.
Basically, what we see is that in Montana in 2015-2016, there was 639 self-reported incidents of threats by schools when they were filling out this form.
He says that includes 11 instances of possession of a firearm. He says they'll compile the 2017 to 2018 data this spring. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
A Blackfeet Law Enforcement Services police officer died this weekend. Details, however, are still under wraps. The tribal police agency posted a prominent photo on its Facebook page Saturday featuring the officer's badge, number 815. It's secured in a black sash, called a mourning band, to honor officers who have died. BLES Lieutenant Howard Lee.
We had an officer, he passed away in his home, it wasn't on duty, and we do not suspect foul play whatsoever.
Lee declined to reveal the officer's name and cause of death out of respect for the family. The death was also recognized yesterday on the Missoula City Police Facebook page with this brief statement. Quote, "We wish to extend our prayers and condolences to the Blackfeet law enforcement community and family who lost one of their own. Rest easy, brother." End quote. Out at MSU Billings will host a vigil on campus for Transgender Day of Remembrance tomorrow as part of Transgender Awareness Week. I found out more. At least 22 transgender or gender nonconforming people have been killed this year, according to the Human Rights Campaign. Transgender Day of Remembrance honors people who have lost their lives to anti-transgender violence every year on November 20th. Reverend Dwight Welch is the counselor for Out at MSUB and the campus minister for the United Campus Ministry.
It's an obligation, obviously, those who have died, but it also is important for those who are living, for trans people to know that the wider society is invested in their safety and their well-being.
Out at MSUB will observe Transgender Day of Remembrance this Wednesday at 5:30 p.m. The vigil will include speeches from City Council member Brent Cromley and Women's and Gender Studies Center Director Jennifer Lynn. Reverend Welch.
We also have a number of trans students on campus who wanted to share their stories of life on campus and in Montana.
Several faith-based groups are co-sponsoring the event. Billings Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, Billings Grace United Methodist Church, United Campus Ministry at MSUB, Billings First Congregational Church, and Bethlehem Lutheran.
Because faith is used so often to denigrate people based on sexual orientation and gender identity, it becomes even more imperative for faith communities to say, no, we won't accept that. We have a vision of human flourishing that welcomes people regardless of sexuality and gender.
Transvisible Montana and MSUB Women's and Gender Studies Center also collaborated on organizing the event. Wednesday's vigil will be secular. Grace United Methodist Church will have a service surrounding Transgender Awareness Week on Saturday. The University of Montana in Missoula will also observe Transgender Day of Remembrance on Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the University Center. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. An arrest has been made in connection to two poaching incidents in south-central Montana in August. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks game wardens arrested 23-year-old Earl Russell Bennis of Roundup on Friday. He faces two felony and 19 misdemeanor charges stemming from two poaching cases in Musselshell County in which three trophy bull elk were killed with a gun fired from a vehicle on a public roadway at night during closed hunting season. The crimes prompted 1-800-TIP-MONT program and two Montana sportsman groups to offer $3,000 in rewards for information leading to a conviction. FWP game warden Randy Hudson-Biller said after the rewards were offered, a concerned citizen called with information that eventually led to the arrest. Bennis was arrested on a $10,000 warrant. He has posted bond and has been released from jail. They've been in the news a lot recently.
Wild hog.
Destructive feral swine.
Feral pigs.
Feral hogs? What was this person talking about?
And while they make for an entertaining headline, wildlife managers in Montana are increasingly concerned about the damage these invasive pigs can cause to farmers, ranchers, the environment, and Montana's outdoor recreation economy. Nikki Ouellette reports from the first Feral Swine Coordination Summit in Billings.
Livestock producers from the High Line, weed district managers from the prairie, hunting and conservation groups, and researchers from Canada converged on Billings last week to brainstorm what more can be done to keep feral swine out of Montana.
Yeah, I think you're seeing like Operation Purple State in action here, where people come from a wide variety of views, but we all care greatly about the landscape and the people here.
Ann Miller is the executive director of the Montana Pork Producers Council, which represents hog farmers who collectively brought in $53 million in sales last year. She says she's eager for conference hosts Montana Invasive Species Council, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services to solidify a working agreement with Customs and Border Protection to monitor the hogs' advance toward Montana.
They have some fantastic assets that they're already using, and as long as we could ensure they would be used appropriately and come to an agreement, I see that as a huge advantage for us.
Other suggestions from Friday's summit include shoring up cooperative agreements with tribal and federal lands managers, better educating the public through a recently launched Squeal on Pigs campaign, beefing up brand inspections, much like the state has done with boat inspections, and asking Canadian provinces for more disease monitoring and population control measures. Feral swine have been spotted within 5 to 20 miles of the state's northern border. Montana managers are eager to keep them at bay based on the $1 billion in annual damage to crops and property they've inflicted elsewhere, along with the hogs' potential to transmit diseases to livestock and humans. Ryan Brook, a researcher with the University of Saskatchewan, laments that the Canadian government waited to regulate swine until after wild boars imported for exotic ranching had been let go or escaped and expanded their range.
The only way to deal with this is to think of it like a fire. You call 911 and say, my kitchen's on fire. They don't say, oh, your kitchen. Well, call me when it gets to the living room and we'll get on it. That is not the thinking that we need to apply.
Montana outlawed hunting feral swine in 2015 to disincentivize people introducing them into the state, although licensed sales have boosted revenues in states with wild boar seasons like California. Brooks says hunting and trapping have also proven ineffective strategies for population control because the sound of gunshots cause the pigs to disperse further, and once a hunting program is in place, hunters will work to keep pigs on the ground. Instead, Montanans are required to report any feral swine sightings to the State Department of Livestock. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Nikki Ouellette in Billings.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.